KBTC, a viewer-supported community service of Bates Technical College.
From KBTC Public Television Studios in Tacoma, Washington, it's the Northwest Now podcast. Each week, we take a closer look at the people and issues that affect all of us here in Western Washington. So sit back, relax, and join the conversation with your host, Tom Lason.
We tend to think we're smarter in Washington, but we've got the third highest number of homeless people in the United States. On the West Coast, only California has us beat. More than 16,000 people are homeless in King County alone, making Seattle ground zero for the problem, as it has been since the homeless crisis was officially declared more than a decade ago. And into all of this enters We Heart Seattle, a group of volunteers founded in 2020 by Andrea Suarez, who works to clean up the environmental catastrophe caused by illegal encampments while trying to influence the city's approach to the problem. We're talking to We Heart Seattle next on Northwest Now. Billions of dollars have been spent on homelessness, but all the numbers are going in the wrong direction. The Housing First and harm reduction models tried for a while in Seattle have failed. And now, after the last election, the city has decided to move back toward a more permissive treatment of drug offenders and the continued hope that the chronic criminals embedded in the homeless community can somehow be persuaded to change their ways. Working in the midst of all of this is Andrea Suarez and the organization she founded, We Heart Seattle. We Heart Seattle claims to have removed 2 million pounds of trash from public spaces and helped 300 people get off the streets, all with private fundraising. Suarez works at the intersection of trying to clean up the city physically on the one hand and at the same time trying to influence homeless policy. Andrea, thanks so much for coming to Northwest Now to talk a little more about We Heart Seattle. You know, I was thinking we should get her back on the show, and then I looked back and it was like, I think it was 2 years ago that we talked last time. You are now 5 years into this, going on six. And one of the things, and in the interest of transparency, we talked a little bit before this interview that you're okay with this line of questioning. But I think it's important for people to know that this isn't some hobby you're doing, something you're doing for clicks and something for likes and some kind of an ego trip. Doing this work that you do in downtown Seattle has come at a pretty significant personal price. And I'd like you to talk a little bit about that and tell folks what you've been through attempting to do this work.
Well, thanks for having me back. It's good to be here. Yep. 5 years in, 2 million pounds of trash, 50,000 hours of volunteers came out and cleaned up Seattle's shared spaces. And we found grimly bodies, bones, human waste, needles, thousands of pieces of drug paraphernalia, watching human despair and human suffering, drug addiction, untreated mental illness. And the same people over and over again who are service resistant that you want to set out to help. And sort of being in that first responder role, like police and fire, you absorb that trauma, depression, PTSD, self-medication. I'm on a lot of medication right now. I'm not going to lie. I lost my corporate job after 25 years. I mean, it was kind of time, but going from a nice, fat, six-figure job with benefits and paid vacation to a poor social worker wage was absolutely a sacrifice. Running for office. I don't know if you knew that. You knew, but I ran against Sean Scott as a state representative. Then I became very political. You know, my friendships started to become a little bit estranged.
Yep.
People were like, where are you out on the political spectrum? You sound conservative because you want people to be accountable and mandate treatment. And that sounds like a conservative talking point. I was a card-carrying Democrat. I got crushed by a Democratic socialist, Sean Scott, in my race. So I've just really been lost, abandoned, estranged by relationships, and put on some weight. I've aged. I mean, let's face it, I was in my 40s when I started, and I'm 51 this month. And yeah, sometimes I wake up and say, what in the heck am I doing, except that I have 100% doubled down that this ministry, if you will, is a calling. And being a civic servant has been the most rewarding thing I've done in my life.
And I'm glad you share that, because I wanted people to understand that this hasn't been free. And You know, and I appreciate your transparency there, and wish you the best. Obviously, I'll say that early in overcoming some of those things hanging in there, because I know that it has been difficult work. You mentioned your loss to Sean Scott. You know, Seattle dipped its toe briefly into moderation for a couple of years here recently, and then this past election, boom, right back we go. What are your thoughts about that? Do you lose hope a little bit there when it looks like more of the same? What are your thoughts about where the city is politically and the impact that has on the issues you're dealing with?
It feels there's a popularity contest there with Democratic Socialists and what happened in New York. Our mayor here, Katie Wilson, candidates like Sean Scott and Alexis Mercedes Rank, crushing moderates.
Yeah.
I mean, not just winning by a small margin, but really taking those races and leading all the way through. Really, whether it's, Trump backlash, opposite of anything that's moderate, kind of to reset maybe the national trend. But unfortunately, I think that Trump lives rent-free in 99% of people's heads, but yet has 99% nothing to do with our backyard. And I wish that voters would turn out. Frankly, it is a voter turnout crisis. People have turned off what to believe, and why we're so proud of our direct action to go out and learn by doing. Look at the trash, look at the human suffering, look at the empty buildings, look at the destruction of low barrier shelters and housing first projects that aren't producing the outcomes, and see why are these electeds getting to where they're at, raking in billions of dollars without producing outcomes. It's very mind-boggling, to be honest.
My cynical view on this is that the reason things have continued and carried on the way they have is that it's simply too profitable to change. Set me straight on that. Am I wrong?
Well, I mean, in any other private sector, the Homeless Inc. would be out of business. People would be laid off. There's not enough outcomes, billions going in. Homelessness is up several 100%. 30,000 people have lost their lives to death by overdose since we've implemented these policies, things like housing first, harm reduction, keep people comfortable until they're ready to address their untreated mental illness or drug addiction. And it's just not working. You hear a couple examples here and there that maybe housing first helped a person, but certainly not when they were on fentanyl. The only people that I know that are getting help are the ones that are court ordered through drug court to either go to jail or go to treatment because they've committed enough crimes that's where they're at.
I want to break both of those out separately. Let's start with harm reduction.
Yeah.
I've had guests on this program for a long time talking about harm reduction, and I get the logic of it. There's a piece of me that says, well, listen, the house is on fire. Let's not put more fire on it. Let's have some safe tools. If you're going to be drug addicted, let's not get, another disease as a result of it. It makes some sense to me. But if you look at the results have failed miserably. What is wrong with harm reduction?
Well, again, we go back to the needle dispensaries really made sense during the HIV crisis. Here we are 2026, decades later, and we're handing out foil and methamphetamine pipes to smoke narcotics that aren't spreading disease. And addiction is a disease. So when we enable that, isn't that spreading the disease of addiction and enabling people to stay trapped longer? And if you ask the men and women in recovery, of which this is a pivot, we're really working with the recovery community more and more to come out and pick trash with us. When surveying them, they're like, no, do not hand me the tools to slowly kill myself, even if just for no other reason but morally wrong. Just stop, full stop. And why would taxpayers have to pay for it to boot? That makes no sense. And then you have the contradiction of behavioral health and public safety. So those needles and foils end up in our parks, picked up by children, by dogs. They litter our parks. I've picked up hundreds of thousands of pieces of this drug paraphernalia. And it's just psychologically a burden for the rest of society. It's not reducing harm. It's enabling addiction.
Another piece I wanted to break out separately, housing first. It was the hot new thing. And again, I will also admit to you, Andrea, at first, I'm thinking through this, and I like the idea. Let's solve the housing problem so they're not worrying about where the roof is going to be over their head. Get them out of the cold. Boom. We got that covered. Now we can start working on the rest of you. That has failed miserably, too. Why?
You cannot help a person treat their addiction when the fox is in the hen house. You're putting a bunch of people with a bunch of different disabilities in an apartment in perpetuity for free for life with no requirement to enroll in mental health care or substance abuse treatment. None, zero. So what happens is they will be trapped there for years, furthering their addiction, getting sicker, losing their teeth, getting thinner. It's terrible. I see it every day.
Talk about some of the conditions you've seen in places like
Plymouth. Yeah, you go inside, they are unable to care for just basic janitorial. Their bathrooms are overtaken by cockroaches. Appliances don't work. Indoor fires. I've met multiple people who have housing or shelter or tiny homes that still remain out on the street because they simply just can't adapt. I don't understand why our folks at the University of Washington and beyond are not pivoting and saying, treatment first. Go to a treatment facility. That's the model We Heart Seattle uses, and we have hundreds of people that have gotten off the streets into treatment, into recovery homes, back to parents, back to their children, serving their warrants. Accountability is love. Accountability is empowerment. And when we canceled that, we really started seeing that decline in the system working.
And like you said, there's no rock bottom in Seattle now. You really can't hit rock bottom. And you've called Housing First too glorified hospice care.
It is, yeah. I see it as just call it end of life care and let's stop arguing. Call it hospice care, we'll stop arguing. Call it safe injection sites, safe place to use.
It was supposed to be kind. Supposed to be kind, right?
Right now, the low barrier, you know, and I'm going to name them, Plymouth Housing, the DESC, old guard, well-intended housing for people with the worst of the worst disabilities are harboring the drug addicts in Seattle. Everybody knows to find their dealer in these homes. We are funding dealers in these homes in low barrier, free for life housing that we pay for so that these dealers can prey on the residents, whether they're schizophrenic, mentally ill, whether they're addicted. Fentanyl changed the game. Housing First was studied on inebriated alcoholics 2 decades ago, right? In a DESC house, right? The drugs have changed. And any drug addict will tell you it does make sense to get treatment before housing. Just put me through a 28-day program.
How do addicts fund their habits?
Oh my gosh. They are boosting, so retail theft, flipping their gift cards, flipping their food stamp cards, siphoning gas, porch pirating, smash and grab on your windows. I saw two guys with stolen luggage going down First Avenue yesterday. Sadly, a lot of men and women are trading sex and different tricks to support their daily habit. A daily habit is really anywhere from $50 to $200 a day, depending on where your tolerances are. One gentleman I know who's been on the streets for 12 years, and he's like, Andrea, I'm the best thief there is. And he has to buy about $100,000 of drugs a year to keep him well,
which
the retail on that was probably, you have to assume double. So $200,000 to $300,000 times 10 years, you're talking like $1 million in retail theft for one guy to support his habit for 10 years, times thousands of drug addicts doing the same thing. And you wonder why we have a $3 billion a year state of Washington retail theft number.
And a quiet downtown Seattle.
It's rooted in drug addiction, drug addiction, drug addiction, drugs, drugs, drugs.
And when I say quiet, I meant from a retail perspective. Why stores and storefronts.
It's small business are being impacted, your Targets, your Walmart, your corner pharmacies. But yeah, the ability to come to Seattle, a sanctuary city where there's a no rules playground. We just elected a prosecuting attorney who said she will not prosecute for consumption.
That was my next question, the suicidal empathy piece here. Talk a little bit about that and SPD not arresting, going back to that model again.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they'll arrest on certain occasions if they're a repeat, maybe somebody that the police have identified as a real, you know, high utilizer. But at the end of the day, the message is sent to the criminal mind. It's sent to the addict. The addict, the addiction is in charge. And so all these bordering cities and all these bordering counties are we have an inflow. Droves of people are going to come to a sanctuary city where they can now pitch their tent. They won't get prosecuted. They might get arrested or stopped, but they will go into a diversion program, which in past has been the lead, where they get to go to a hotel, the Civic Hotel, with a view of the Space Needle.
To score more drugs.
And an air-conditioned room while they have a gazebo to smoke fentanyl, again, on our dime, instead of going to jail and being accountable for their behavior that's associated with their addiction.
Danny Westneat recently wrote a piece in the Seattle Times about the experience down in Portland. The mayor down there, Keith Wilson, he stood up shelters, enforced a camping ban. News sounds pretty good, but of course, the Stop the Sweeps crowd and the other advocates on the extreme left there say that's not enough. Now, of course, it'll never be enough, right? I mean, is there an enough? Can this problem be solved?
It is. I've read those articles, and I know Mayor Wilson in Seattle has said the same thing. You know, 4,000 more shelters, more affordable housing. But we have an affordable housing surplus. See, we have shelters for people to go. There are options. They don't want to go. Uh-huh. They are service resistant, codependent groups and clusters of people that work in a system where one's the dealer, one's the person that trades her body, the other person scores the dope, the other one's the dealer, the other one cooks. It's over and over and over again. The crisis population, Mayor Harrell couldn't figure it out. Prior mayors don't know what to do with the crisis population that are wreaking havoc on the communities. It's a very small number, actually, that we're talking about. And it's just, we don't want to jail them. We don't want to mandate treatment. And there's something there in between. And I think that's why models like We Heart Seattle that go out there and clean the parks and build trust in a really a humanitarian crisis way without government might just be the way out for hundreds of people, because we've certainly already proved that model possible.
You've talked about taking a clinical approach to homeless camps, having some mandated, or not mandated, but approved camp type of setup. Talk a little bit about what your vision is for that and what some of the other policy pieces that you're advocating, how do those fit together and possibly help the problem?
I do believe in transitional camps. There's three in Seattle. There's like a Tent City, 234, and a Camp United We Stand. If well run, that's always the caveat. Yeah. If well run, you have security, you have bathrooms, you have electricity, you have a safe place for a certain demographic of people to camp. Again, not usually the drug addicts who have to commit crime all day to support their habit. Those encampments really aren't still even suited for that population. However, I do think there could be a reimagined triage, like sort of FEMA for this population tent that says, you're going to go in here with an exit plan. You cannot be here more than 30 days. You're coming in there with the expectation that you will do something with your life than just continue to squat, loiter, steal, use in our public spaces. Again, without a mayor willing to mandate, you have to go here or you will be arrested and go to jail. You do not end the crisis population wreaking havoc on our community. Same thing with Portland. He opened up the shelters. Wow, that was really good. Whether it was mats on churches, community centers, he got that count done. And I think Wilson can get that count done. But people might just go in for a night, get a warm bed, take a shower, get a meal, but they're right back out there. And while that disrupts their cycle, it really isn't as sustainable as saying no narcotics in our parks. There's a bill in the state right now, I think it's being argued today, that should we pass a, you know, basically you cannot resolve move camps unless you have this like 100 list of things you can accommodate, dogs, yeah, groups of people, all the things.
So no sweeps.
No sweeps. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, fine. For argument purposes, fine. I support it. Except that there's one thing. If there's narcotics anywhere near those camps, full stop, remove now. No one wants to talk about the narcotics.
Yeah.
It's wild.
What do you think, what's your number one policy prescription right now? As you talk to lawmakers and you get involved in policy, which you indicated earlier was kind of where you think the key to this might lie in your work. If you could have one thing, what would it be?
Well, one of our proudest moments being now 5 years old is that legislators from both sides of the aisle are calling upon We Heart Seattle for information, whether it's whether or not we should take little children that are in tents next to a mother who's using and also a prostitute, or things like should we have broader nuisance property legislation around the low barrier shelters that are having the most 911 calls, or you know, narcotic use when and where. My number one thing, and I just said it, is if fentanyl is anywhere in the midst of a public space, close to a daycare, a park, a playground, a community center, a library, full stop, arrest now. That is poison. It's taking our loved ones. It's now a national weapon of mass destruction. It's fentanyl.
Last 30 seconds, naked self-promotion. If people want to get involved and learn more, what do they do? Where do they go?
WeHeartSeattle.org, time, talent, treasure. We are a 501c3. We're 5 years old. We have a strong back of the house. Volunteering is how you vote for the backyard you want to live. So get out, volunteer, pick up some trash, connect to the homeless. My mantra is everybody's an outreach worker. Everybody can lend a helping hand up. Think about, are you helping or enabling somebody when you leave them a sandwich or give them a dollar? Try to connect them to a service or donate to a nonprofit that's out there, boots on the ground. And if I had $1 million, I would put more outreach on the ground. We need intervention at the ground level. So it's not a top down, it's a bottom up outcome here. So thanks for your time.
Andrea, thanks so much for coming to Northwest Now. Billions of dollars later, homelessness and drug addiction are as bad as ever, and there's desperate need for a new approach. Although, with the results of the 2025 elections, that's probably not going to happen, because good luck getting affordable housing investments going when the very notion of private property is an anathema to the city's new leadership. And let's not forget, while housing is a secondary effect of the problem, it's not the primary one, and there's not enough political will to aggressively discourage drug vagrancy and mandate treatment. The bottom line, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. And yet, here we are. I wish We Heart Seattle the best of luck, as I do the people of Seattle who have suffered through this for so many years.